Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Wood. And my guest today is Helena Variara from Tuscany. Tell us the name of your estate and whereabouts in Tuscany are you? How did you get there?
Okay, our estate is named Colombaia, and it's located in Menzanello, Colle di Valdelsa, Siena. It's a very tiny.
In Siena province. So in which denomination are you in? Are you in the Chianti Classico region?
No, we are in the Colli Senesi, effectively, but we are not anymore under the label of Chianti, you know. We just declass our wine to EGT. It's a choice. It's a political choice, yeah.
So the history of the state is your husband, Dante. It comes through his mother's side of the family. And historically, it was a very well-known, the family business was very, very well-known. Can you just give us a little bit about the history?
Yes, the history is come from the grandfather of Dante, that was called Dante too, that was in Milano. And he had a big house producing wine in the south of Italy in different areas, and also selling all around Italy, mainly in Milano. So it was a big producer, I can say, more industrial vision, but it was at the beginning of the century, so it was very big. And he makes good money, I think, with this. And after this, his son, that is Piero, so the father of Dante now, bought this little property after he sold all the property of the grandfather, because after the war, all the market changed and there was a kind of little abandoned areas and so on, especially in the south. So they sell everything and they bought this little property in Tuscany in the 70s, long time abandoned. And they rebuilt the vineyard that was already here in the 17th century. And they just maintained the tradition to make some wine, some little wine for the friends. And the rest was all sell to the big seller. So the father of Dante was a journalist, so was very busy, and he just do this like a hobby. Okay, we come in 2003, and we do this full time. So we decided to do this in a full time activity.
But was when they bought the farm in 1974, was Dante living there immediately, or when did he arrive?
Yeah. He was living here and grow here. I mean, he lived in Milano when he was 10, I think. And he come here to live, and he makes school here. So he makes some part of his life was here. And then at 20, he leave the country life for going back to Milano. To have a city life, and there where we met effectively 27 years ago, and we worked together also in Milano, and then we decided to come back here in 2003.
Oh, so you met in the north, did you, both of you?
Yes. We met in the north, and we were working in a TV business, so I was more on the side of production contract and all this kind of procedures, and Dante was more camera and director activities. So we work together. We do a lot of works in Rai and other kind of TV business. And then in 2003, we decided to come here and to take care of the farm, because the father was old and just want to sell everything. And so we decided to come in and to take care.
Okay. So from TV to going from TV studios to hot Tuscan conditions, with an abandoned building and vineyard, is quite a leap, isn't it?
Yes, it's a jump. It was a jump in the dark, effectively. We were totally unprepared, I can say now, totally unprepared. But we arrive here and we have some kind of vision about agriculture. Of course, the vineyard was already organic from the 90s. We had already kind of life, you know, in the city, bicycle, organic, Steiner school. So we had already a lot of information. Dante also made in the 80s a nice 5 days or 1 week course of biodynamic agriculture in the north of Italy, Le Cascine Orsine, that was famous place where you do courses of biodynamic agriculture. But at that time was even not, you know, thinking to come back to the country life. But anyway, when we arrived here, we just jump. I mean, everything was in place. So it was very easy in some sense. We have just to work on it. And we decided to go in full, you know, and we use biodynamic to learn through the rhythm, through how the plants function and so on. So through biodynamic, we have been also transformed and we fall in love with the vineyard first. And then we were, I can say now, between the first in Tuscany especially, to decide also to vinify the most purest possible without an intervention, because in our naive vision, we had no idea how complicated and how full of additives is the wine producing. So we were like astonished by this, but we decided to go further. You know, we say, okay, we work closely to the plant, we respect everything. Why change this in the cellar? So we started looking for, and we had the chance also to have some French friend that introduced us to the natural wine world that in Italy at that moment was really inexistent.
Did your neighbors think, hang on, we've got these, it's classic, you know, these rich kids and they like yoga and biodynamics. Was there a lot of hostility, or did people just think that you're a little bit crazy?
No, there was some kind of hostility because they say that we are too small, natural wine doesn't exist, biodynamic, it's nobody knows effectively so much. And everybody was saying, you need a famous enologist, it's too small, your winery to make some money. You know, everybody was against our attitude. They say we are utopics ideas. We have utopics ideas. The reality is very different. But we go on, you know. We were very determined.
They see you as a threat, that you're upsetting their orthodoxy. We're in Tuscany. I mean, generalize, but Tuscany is quite traditional. This is how we do things, not like the way you're doing it. Why don't you go back to Milan?
Exactly. Like we were like totally out from the normal, but we resist because we have some reference that give us courage. You know, when you met some French winemaker like us that work the land, that do the things, you know, not like many Tuscany here, very rich with all people working for them. You know, they even don't know what's happened in the cellar. You know, we know exactly. So, and we want to do like this. So the inspiration from the French winemaker was very strong for us and help us to resist, you know, to the pressure.
Who were the winemakers that were helping you or speaking with?
But of course, I can mention many French that has been inspirational for us. But the first was Marcel Lapierre that unfortunately we lost. But he was one of the first that gave us the courage to go on. And also, he was one of the big, you know, of the movement of natural wine. And then also we met some friends from Loire. But there are many, you know, that we get information in some sense and courage from them to go on.
So tell me a little bit about the vineyard. How big is it? What have you got planted? Soil type, that kind of thing.
So we have 3.9 hectares, and when we arrived, we have especially the old vineyard that now is 55, that it's typical Chianti mix of grapes. So we have Sangiovese mainly, 80%, then Colorino, Malvasia Nera, and Canaiolo. And the young vineyard we planted in 2005 is also typical grapes of Tuscany, Sangiovese and Colorino. But the father of Dante insisted to put some few row of Cabernet Sauvignon, okay? We discussed about that, but okay, he was the boss at that time, so we decided, okay, to consent to this Cabernet Sauvignon. And we never vinify the Cabernet Sauvignon. I mean, we always separate and vinify for him. And we vinify the young vineyard and the old vineyard separately. So it's a parcel wine, I can say. This because we just realized that the new clones of Sangiovese, we have more than five in the young vineyard, are completely different from the old Sangiovese from the 70s. In structure, color, way of vinification, and time also of expression, in a sense that the old vineyard needed 3 years to express itself, long élevage. But contrary, the young vineyard is quite ready soon. It's very purple, crunchy, beautiful Sangiovese. I mean, we like very much, but they are very, very different. So at that point, we realized that the old vineyard is quite rare in Tuscany, quite disappeared. And so we are also replanting in the old vineyard where we have some hole, you know, because some plants are dying. So we replace with the same kind of breed of Sangiovese, trying to keep, you know, the original Sangiovese.
Yeah, they'll be biotypes, won't they? And so in terms of the winemaking, is it stainless steel, oak body, cement? What have you got?
We have concrete tank under the soil, very near to the vineyard. So we can arrive every 50 minutes in the harvest by hand. And we put the grapes inside the concrete tank, especially the old vineyard. It's all in concrete tank with the submerged cap. Of course, is de-steamed, but it's keep the skin in infusion, okay? And it's fresh also, naturally, so no control temperature. But contrary, the young vineyard and the little bit of white we have, we use stainless steel directly. This is because we like the stainless steel. The crunchiness is more evident in the young vineyard. But contrary, the old vineyard pass through the cement, the concrete tank, and then stay 3 years in a big barrel, Oikos Livonia, old one, 26 hectolitres. Okay.
In terms of your soil for the Sangiovese, I mean, how would you describe the tannins that you get on Sangiovese on your particular soils?
I think we have a good balance between tannin and characteristic of Sangiovese, transparency, elegance, and deepness. But also we are very soft on touching the Sangiovese because we find that Sangiovese can be immediately extremely tannic if you don't pay attention. So we are very soft in pressing and we use very simple electric soft press, but very soft on pressing and very, we don't touch too much, you know, we don't try to extract too much from our Sangiovese. And this is why I think we have this elegance and this freshness all the time.
So for your reds, when do they start to show? Do they need a year in bottle or a couple of years?
I think we discover with time, because we are still learning, that our wine are very good in time. I mean, they resist very well. I mean, but that is our importer that discovered this. I mean, they keep the bottle and then they make us tasting again. So we just taste recently, 2008, that it's even so good now than when we sell it, you know. So we discover too, because also with this myth that wine without sulfites cannot survive, you know, there is kind of strange ideas that in reality is not true at all. And so I find our wine quite we bottle when they are ready, and we wait 6 months, 1 year, depends from the vintages, before starting to taste with our importers or sommelier or people, because we like that the wine is stable, you know, there in itself, like I say, with his complete body formed, the perfumes formed. So bottle is very important also.
Are all your wines no added sulfites or just some of them?
No, I think the Vigna Vecchia is the most delicate in this sense. The young vineyard and the white that we make in a long maceration, 4 months maceration on skin, it's very, they went fast. So they are ready in 1 year. I mean, we bottle and then we can sell as up, I can say. The bottling also is done by gravity with the moon in the right position and everything. And it's quite not so stressing for our wine. So it's more the old vineyard that need time to recompose a little bit after bottling, and to the affination make it more elegant and ready to enjoy, you know, and to travel too. So
what do you see in the future in general for natural wine, biodynamic wine?
I mean, now we are a little bit on the fashion wave. Apart now with COVID and what everything has happened, everything has been a little bit like, you know, extended, like pause for a moment. But I mean, I'm happy that there are more and more new winemakers on natural wine world. That means that the message, I mean, the possibility, and also the people have understand the opportunity, not only commercially, that's the bad people do this, but the youngest and the new generation is more and more going near to this way of thinking about wine, you know. Wine, it's not indispensable. It's something, it give a pleasure, is a substance that elevates your spirit, but it's not indispensable. So it's very good that we are going through a natural winemaking. So we pollute a little bit less than the other agriculture industry is doing all around. And wine, it's a big contribute to pollution. So I'm very happy that this movement has been, you know, defunded more and more. So it's okay. We are all different, all with his own characteristics. So no problem.
I think also being in Tuscany helps, because the percentage of organic and biodynamic is growing quite strongly in some regions. So that's good for the future. I mean, what do you see for you personally for the future, the estate personally, and then globally? Do you think this sort of trend towards organic and biodynamic will continue, or will people get bored and want a new?
But, you know, I think for me, biodynamic, it's the agriculture of the future. Even in this last day, probably you have read also, there has been a big attack against biodynamic. It's considered like, you know, druid practices or something like this. There was different articles on the newspaper shooting against biodynamic agriculture. I think there is always the same discussion. You make the wine with the moon, with this kind of things. And this make me a little bit smile, because this are knowledge of the past in some sense. Everybody in the past know that have to plant in the right moment, that the moon have its importance in the act you have on the land. So make me a little bit smiling about this opposition from, I think, from the lobbies, you know, that the biodynamic, it's a druid, the practice, and it's nothing, and so on. But the reality is that when you practice, you can see the difference, and it's very visible. Even the practice you use seems a little bit like nothing, you know, because you dynamize and then you spray some little drops and you see, bah, this is crazy. But then you see the land changing, the structure of the land is changing, the plants are more happy, and you can see. So and this changed your mind, you know, that's why so many people now is converting, understanding more and more about biodynamic, and understanding is possible. You can do more simple, you know, that is also interesting. Biodynamic is giving a message that agriculture is possible in a different way, more quality, less quantity, look to the inner things, you know, and also more health for you, agriculture, and for the people around you. So I think this will be more and more defunded. For our point of view, we maintain little, you know, we want to live and to do this till we can, you know, because time is crucial. Making wine, you make once a year. So if you make a mistake, you have to wait another year. And then you depend so much from weather. 60%, I think, it depends from what's happened on the sky. So you are so nothing, you know, in relationship to what we do in reality. So for me, from our point of view, we will go on with this. So we will try to be you know, the best we can. And that's it. You know, our relationship are still there. We built our relationship and they are growing and consolidate. So we are happy like this. I mean, we don't want any more.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is continuing to grow. And even internationally now, with some of the countries, which we won't name, that were a little bit anti organic and biodynamic in times past. I mean, it is slowly building, and in some areas, really quickly building. I mean, Tuscany's got a huge percentage of organic estates, and in general, it's got high percentages as well. So, it's very nice to hear from you.
Nothing. Thank you for calling me.
Helena's estate and Dante's estate was one of the first I visited as a journalist, as writing about Tuscany, and it was a beautiful day, I remember. Your enthusiasm then has obviously not diminished.
No, not really.
Which is fantastic. And just want to say thanks to you for telling us a little bit about the history of the estate. Sorry Dante couldn't be with us.
Sorry too. He say hello to you, and we hope to see you here again, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Just keep up the good work. Take care.
Yeah, thank you. Ciao, ciao. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.